Hi there. It's me, Laura Wasser, the divorce attorney and the founder of It's Over Easy, the online divorce service. I've been practicing family law for over 20 years, and I've worked on thousands of divorces, shepherding people through what may be one of the most terrifying times in their lives. Along the way, I often have to remind people to lower their expectations. When dealing with matters of the heart, rules simply don't apply, because all's fair in love and war. So welcome to the All's Fair podcast. Fasten your seatbelts and let's go. Hey everyone, I'm Laura Wasser and this is All's Fair.
My name is Johnny Rains. Thank you for listening to our podcast today.
This is one of the most surreal of summers, but amid all the shifts and turns we've had to make, one of the most positive I've seen is the coming together. I'm trying to be positive. I know there's still much division in our country, but the movement towards criminal justice reform and even the coronavirus coming together seems to have drawn many of us to rally ideologically around the unifying themes of health and equality.
And breaking news, folks, speaking of coming together, the COVID divorce spike that's been headline news most of this year did not happen.
That's good news. And as I was saying, the positivity rising from these surreal days that we're living in since the coronavirus came to town in, February, March, it's quite encouraging.
Could you elaborate here on what you make of the news about the drop in divorces after so many said there would be a spike?
Look, I love this article. It's by Ann Hendershot. It was in Spectator.org.
Yes. And it's American said, Spectator.
And they lived happily ever. Predicted flood of coronavirus or COVID divorces never materialized. I like it. And they quote all these divorce attorneys around the country that kept talking about how there would be a spike. Here's the problem. The reason that there hasn't been a spike is because the courthouses have not been open. So when she reports about the low numbers of divorce filings, that's because people weren't able to file. I still think, and again, this is just idealism. In any event, I still think that people have opted to kind of come together and work through it. Obviously, if there were issues beforehand, certainly being quarantined together might have made it worse. As you know, here in California, we are kind of experiencing like a second spike, which is really disheartening.
Yes.
I haven't left the house in like a week and a half. But I will say that I am finding in my practice that although people are frustrated, although old cases are kind of coming back with people trying to modify support or having questions about their custody arrangements, I am not seeing as many new cases as we thought that there would be. I think there will be a huge, huge, and already is, glut in our courthouses as they are opening back up. I mean, the cases that I had scheduled to be trying or having hearings in March are now pushed to September. And again, that's for the things that were already scheduled for March. So if you're filing something now, you're looking at a possible 2021 kind of a date. Again, they're giving priority to custody issues, but the financial ones and the long cause trials are taking a long time. So I don't know how accurate this is, again, because of that, but I do love the idea that people are kind of digging deep, working through things. And the other thing that she talks about here is that there are lower numbers of marriages going on. And,
right.
And I know that. We've talked about that before on our show. And I think that's kind of actually wise. You'd think a divorce attorney would feel differently. But I think it's good that people are getting married later. I think it's good that people are thinking outside of the box in terms of whether or not we need to have a marriage license or certificate to cohabit, to have children. And I think it really, what it reflects is a serious examination of the relationship, what you want, what you need, etc.
Well, you summed that up very nicely, Laura.
Well, I want to talk about one more thing in that article, which is the fact that some of the divorce declines are driven by younger women, she says.
Yes.
And I think that's true too. One of the things we've also spoken about in the show and what I speak about around the country, just in December, was speaking in Florida with some of my friends from Barron's, who is responsible for the next article, which is called, I can't read it.
More Married Women Want a Bigger Role in Household Financial Planning, Survey Shows.
So we've talked so often on our show about how women kind of abdicate financial responsibility. And I'm not seeing that happening as much anymore. That's what the article's about. Women, even if they are stay-home moms, are saying, let me be the one that kind of is in charge of our finances, our investments. We're seeing a lot of women-owned investment companies. And really, really taking part in the economics of the family. Our friend Eve Rodsky right. talks about the breakdown of household responsibilities. Seeing women doing that more, I think really engenders a feeling of real partnership. And so I think it's amazing. And I think that is part of, if wives are taking charge of community finances, or according to a recent survey, they are, I think that is going to keep marriages together, frankly.
Well, I agree. And what Nick Fortuna, who wrote the article, also points out is that some of this, it's against the backdrop of the coronavirus and of people being at home together longer. It's having an interesting impact on relationships. And this is one of the examples.
Agree. In a short period of time, we have come a long way. Like the uprisings this summer in protest against police brutality and racism, and the Me Too movement before that, attitudes in our country are starting to shift. As I observe all this and we've been discussing, women are at the forefront of many of these changes, and moms particularly. It's an exciting time, but there's still more work ahead of us, so let's not take our foot off the gas. One of the ways we keep applying the pressure is by acknowledging the disparity that exists. We know women and people of color of every gender are marginalized, and one way for inclusivity to become the norm is to tell and share stories. Our guest today is an awesome storyteller. She's an award-winning reporter and editor and the best-selling author of 7 critically acclaimed books, including her latest page-turner, Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, and the book How to Be Married, which she traveled the world to write with her new husband, interviewing women about the hell it means to be married in cultures in 32 countries. She's written for The Wall Street Journal and The New York Times. She's a sister podcaster who hosts 2 podcasts right here on iHeartRadio. Welcome to All's Fair, Jo Piazza. So Jo, coming to us from Maine, from her friend's kids' room.
I'm coming to you from a bunker in Maine, feels like.
Are you eating lots of lobster up there?
Oh my God, I'm eating so much lobster. There's a ton of lobster up here because no one came up here this year, right?
Right.
So we had lobster grilled cheese yesterday, which sounds kind of gross, but it was
amazing. No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound gross at all.
Yeah. No.
Lobster rolls. Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
All of it. And we're taking the kids out on a lobster fishing trip in a couple of days, which should be great. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about your kids. How old are they now? Charlie and what's your daughter's name?
Charlie and Beatrix.
Oh, I like Beatrix. I have a friend whose daughter's name is Beatrice, but we call her BB. But
we call mine BB too. So
how old is Charlie now? Is he still 3 or is this old
Charlie
news?
Charlie just turned 3. He turned 3 last week, and Beatrix turned 8 months last week as well.
Okay. And your husband is Nick. How long have you guys been married?
We have been married almost 5 years. We got married.
Wow.
I know. We got married on my birthday, my 35th birthday, right when I was about to expire, almost 5 years ago.
Fantastic. So you've got an MA in journalism from Columbia, an MA in religious studies from NYU, and a BA in economics from University of Pennsylvania. So let's talk a little bit about you. Let's talk about your life. I mean, you have this, even your education is so varied and so interesting. You're a dilettante, which I love. I was a rhetoric major, which allowed me to do the same thing. Rhetoric of avant-garde poetry, rhetoric of romantic comedy films. So clearly you have many interests, and you love, I think, from what I'm reading, you love the spinning of a yarn, so to speak.
I love
the telling
spinning
of a tale.
A yarn. I love telling a story. I do. And you know, I think that I'm the most frustrating writer/podcaster for agents ever, because they're like, what's your brand? What do you write about? What do you talk about? And I'm like, I talk about all of the shit. All of it. And it really drives my agent crazy. But the fact is, I just like stories, and I like telling good stories. And I'm in, like, when I hear something interesting, I want to find a way to tell that story to as many people as possible in the world. But the religious studies one, the master's in religious studies, trips people up. But it was because I was a celebrity journalist back in 2007, which was a crazy goddamn year.
Yes.
And you know, I was a celebrity journalist for the New York Daily News. I was out in LA. You know, Britney Spears is having her breakdown. She's going after people with her umbrella and shaving her head. And I was like, I just want to study Jesus. And so I did. And so I spent the next year getting a master's in religious study, and it just kind of cleansed my palate of everything that had happened the year before. And it was really nice.
Well, let's talk about If Nuns Ruled the World, 10 Sisters on a Mission. I mean, that's a good feed in, because that fascinates me. This is your nonfiction novel.
Yes. So actually, If Nuns Ruled the World, it came out of my thesis for my master's at NYU. I started interviewing a bunch of nuns about how they use Twitter, how they were using social media. And at the time, nuns were doing all kinds of things on Twitter. They would pray the rosary for you. There were a couple nuns that were tweeting baseball games. Like, there was one nun who was a huge Pittsburgh Pirates fan. It was called Nuns on the Bus. They were traveling the country. And
why wasn't it called Nuns on the Run? I mean,
it should have been called Nuns on the Run.
We're trying to be original.
Okay, sorry.
And it was all of these just like badass women, and one nun led to another nun.
As that happens.
And I originally wanted to call it, I feel like every good book starts with a good title, and I really wanted to call it Bad Habit. But the nuns didn't love that. But then I found 10 really interesting feminist sisters who were changing their little corner of the world, and no one had told their stories. No one pays attention to nuns because it's like, they're not women, they're not men, they're asexual. It's like they can go run colleges and run hospitals, and it's like, what? Who's, it's a woman doing that? Oh no, it's a nun. It doesn't matter. So I had nuns that were fighting for abortion. I had nuns that were fighting for anti-nuclear proliferation. I had nuns fighting for the ERA, and they were incredible. And we became really close, and 4 of them were at my wedding, 4 of the 10, and 2 of them gave a blessing at my wedding, and we're still on a text chain. I remember when I met my husband, I sent the nuns a picture of him, and they're like, he's hot. And I'm like, oh, good, I've got the nun's blessing. We can move this thing forward, man.
Honey, the nuns like you. Okay, and then another nonfiction novel, Celebrity Inc., How Famous People Make Money.
Yeah, and it was so long ago. That was 10 years ago when everything was completely different. I mean, their Kardashians were still organizing people's closets at that point. And I think the first celebrity on social media was Charlie Sheen back then. But it was the beginning of when celebrities were turning themselves into brands and making money off, you know, selling baby pictures, off shilling for Starbucks, things like that. That no one had any idea that what they were doing. So I thought it was fun to take my economics background, marry it with being a celebrity journalist, and bring them together in this book.
Could you ever have imagined where we are today? Or is that exactly kind of what the book is about? Is like, this is a harbinger of things to come?
I could never have imagined where we are today. Today is so much crazier than I ever expected it to be. But I will say at the end, so I had one chapter that kind of went from the evolution of Paris Hilton into Kim Kardashian and the reality television stars. And at the end of that chapter, I was like, in order for Kim to continue her brand, she's going to have to marry someone more famous than she is and have a lot of babies with that human being. And that
how about that?
Prophetic. Yeah,
how about that?
Yes.
All right, now let's talk about Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, because I'm fascinated by this. So you wrote this in 2018. It was a best-selling novel, and they're making it into a TV show?
They are indeed, yeah.
And who's Charlotte Walsh? Tell our listeners.
So Charlotte Walsh, after the 2016 election, we knew that we wanted to write, I was working with Simon & Schuster, we wanted to write a novel about what it took for a woman to run for office. It's different than a man running for office, but originally it was a satire. And then the election happened and the world became a satire. And so we're like, oh my gosh, now it has to be a serious character-driven novel because none of this is funny anymore. And so Charlotte Walsh was born. Charlotte Walsh is a tech executive running for Senate in Pennsylvania. And it's everything that it takes for a woman to run for office. I mean, how exposed you are, how exposed your marriage is, your life as a mother, everything that a woman has to go through emotionally, psychologically, physically to run for office. And Pennsylvania was a great state because they've never had a female senator. And we kept saying, if you can't see it, if you can't read about it and see it, then you can't elect a woman for it.
Right.
And so we wanted to make Charlotte really relatable and interesting, but also in fiction, commercial women's fiction. So it was a quote unquote beach read because I'm a girl and I wrote a book, and that's what you call it when a girl writes a book. But the cool thing is, so after the novel came out in 2018, we get hundreds and then thousands of emails and letters from women saying, now I'm running for office. Now I'm working on this campaign. Like, I never thought about this before, and this book inspired me to do this. And now we're developing it as a TV show. We've got 8 episodes written. Of course, COVID happens, and now we're going to see where we go from here.
Right. And in fact, this last round was the most women that had ever thrown their hat into the ring ever for president.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you read Rodham?
Oh, yeah.
By Curtis?
Yeah. I just
Isn't it interesting?
Rodham. Yeah,
it's so kind of like, good. It's like sliding doors of like Hillary. I mean, I kept thinking like, wow, this is so crazy.
I know.
In
so,
any event.
So crazy. But also, I think she did such a great job of imagining that world from that sliding doors moment.
Totally possible. Totally possible. And I wonder, I would love to know what Hillary thinks of it.
So I thought that the whole time I was reading it, right? And in my gut, I kind of think she loves it.
I think so too. I think she was going, if only.
If only. If only. But also, you know, I have a lot of friends that have worked with Hillary and that are friends with her. And I feel like she probably just got a kick out of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think she probably took it with a grain of salt and was like, totally. Yep, thank you.
I hope so. So on that note, tell us, Joe, based on what you know from being out in the world or even just in Maine, what do you think about the possibilities of having a female VP in 2020?
I think that we're definitely going to have a female VP in 2020. I don't think that there's any way that Biden can't choose a woman as his running mate. And it's exciting, but then also disappointing, right? Because we had so many incredible women in the field out there, and it just got winnowed down and winnowed down, and we felt like our chance was lost yet again. And it's funny because as we were writing Charlotte Walsh as a television show, we felt this sense of urgency, right? We're like, we've got to do it. We've got to do it. We're electing a woman in 2020, and then this isn't going to be relevant anymore. And now we're like, no, still relevant, still chugging along.
Do you watch, I'm asking because it seems like you and I have similar tastes, do you watch The Good Fight?
Oh my gosh, yes, I love The Good Fight.
Favorite. So do you think that our 2020 VP candidate, since you seem rather prophetic, I figure I'll ask you, will be a woman of color?
I genuinely think that it will be a woman of color.
I do too.
As well that I think it should be. I just think we've reached this time where we need to see more voices represented that we haven't seen in the past. And the interesting thing about Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win is that Charlotte was written as a white woman, but we're like, we can have her be any ethnicity and we can rewrite the character for that. And so we're having those conversations right now too. We're like, we want to see more representation in both fiction and especially on television. So how can we adapt this book that came out 2 years ago to show more representation?
I love it. I love it. It's one of the reasons why I love The Good Fight so much too.
Yeah,
it just,
exactly.
It just resonates so much. This is All's Fair with Laura Wasser. That's me. It's Over Easy is our online divorce website and our virtual community where all's fair in love and war. Acclaimed journalist and prolific storyteller Joe Piazza is our guest today, and we're discussing her work and the importance of telling stories about people and characters who might not often find themselves portrayed with the strength in pop culture. Joe, when it comes to lifting people up, you said to Johnny in the pre-interview that we can't become what we don't hear about or what we don't see, and we can't vote for what we don't relate to. How do these ideas inform and impact the stories you tell, and how do we empower the next generation of girls?
Well, so my goal has always been to find stories that have not been told before and to try to not just tell them, but then try to distribute them, right? Because we also live in a world of content, and spam content. And so I'm like, how can I find stories and get them to as many ears as possible? And so with Charlotte Walsh Likes to Win, my last novel, talking about a woman running for office, I could have written that nonfiction, right? I could have talked about women running for office, and the people that would have bought that would be women who are going to vote for women running for office. But by making it commercial fiction, we get it to a bigger audience. And the same way with the recent podcast that I developed with Tribeca Film Festival called Fierce, you know, we could have done like niche documentaries about badass women that history had forgotten, but instead we chose to make it as broad as possible, to distribute it with iHeartMedia, to give it really big distribution, make it feel like an event and give it a platform. So as many people as possible would be listening to these podcasts about women who were not written into history, probably because men wrote most of history.
Right. I love that.
Not called Her Story, unfortunately.
It's not called Her Story, but you know, just like Rodham, let's see, what's the sliding doors moment, right? Where it all changes.
Right. Right. Okay, so you've got Fierce on iHeart and you've also got Committed, which is interesting. They're both interesting to me and to Johnny because of the show. It's kind of a perfect juncture of everything. Tell us about Committed.
So Committed was born out of my book. I wrote this book when I got married when I was 35. And you know, the age old thing is like, oh my God, you got to get married before you're 35. You're going to be an old maid, like that old cover of Time magazine or whatever. So I met my husband in the Galapagos. We were both journalists on assignment. I dated every douchebag in New York City. Like there was no one left for me to date.
Do you remember that line from When Harry Met Sally? Exactly, she's like, you're going to have to go start sleeping with people in New Jersey because you've slept with everybody in the city.
I had to go to the Galapagos Islands. And my husband was this long-haired California hippie who kind of looked like druggy Neil Young wearing hiking sandals. And I'm like, that's not
what's what does not druggy Neil Young look like? I want to know. But okay, anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
Fair point. And so I was like, he's not my type, but we're on this boat with no Wi-Fi. And he's very handsome and funny. And we hook up and I tell my therapist, I'm like, he's not my type. And she's like, your type is not working for you. Try this out. And I did. And 3 months later, we were engaged. And 9 months later, we were married. Wow. But I was like, I have no idea how the hell to do this. I don't know how to, what is a wife? What does a wife even mean? And I was the editor of Yahoo Travel at the time. So I got to travel around the world on Yahoo's dime, which was super sweet, and interviewed couples and mostly women in countries on every continent except for Antarctica about how do you do this? How do you do this marriage thing? And it became a book called How to Be Married. I still don't know, but there is some really good advice in there. And it's fun to go back and read it now. After I've been married 5 years, because I'm like, who was that couple, that fun, carefree couple running all over the globe? It's not
us. Sure. Did you ever play with the committed, like you have to be committed, like committed to an institution if you're in the situation where you're going to be committed to the marriage? Okay.
That was why we wanted to call the podcast Committed, because we're like, oh my gosh, in order to do this marriage thing, like you're pretty much committed to an institution. You're pretty much being locked up for the rest of your life.
I want to talk a little bit more about Fierce, because in Fierce, give me some of your standout interviews. I'm fascinated by Fierce.
So Fierce is so good. Fierce is 8 episodes, but each one of them is like a mini TV show. We hired actresses to do the characters of all of these historical women. And we had casting calls. Like it was very professional. Tribeca Film Festival, they do a good job with their stuff. They know what they're doing. And so we started out with the Chinese pirate Cheng Yi Sao, who is the greatest pirate who's ever lived. I mean, seriously, the most successful pirate. She was the most successful in terms of making money, in terms of protecting her people, in terms of beating the Chinese government, in terms of beating any government around the world. And no one has ever heard her name. We hear Blackbeard all the time. We hear Captain Jack, right? We never hear about Cheng Yi Sao, who was legitimately the most successful pirate in the world. So she is an entire episode of Fierce. And we soundscaped it with like battle scenes and like guns. And it's cool and exciting and so much fun.
But how does one know which is the most successful pirate? Is there like a Forbes or a Fortune? I mean, how do you know?
I think that you measured it by booty.
She must have had some booty.
Okay. And is there like a recording of booty somewhere?
Well, I mean, she also had the most ships. So she had the most pirate ships under her control, like more than apparently the Portuguese navy at the time. And it's because, here's the thing. So she's a girl, right? Also, former prostitute who marries a pirate and is like, I want control of your pirate fleet.
Right.
But so her thing was cooperation. So she got all of these pirate groups to cooperate with each other and become a giant
like a
pirate
guild or a union of pirates.
Exactly.
Wow.
But the coolest thing about her, again, I think this is a very female trait. She retires. She does it for about 10 years. And then she's like, I made a lot of booty and I'm going to retire and negotiate with the Chinese government to get them to give money to all of my men. Essentially, like she made them civil service employees for the rest of their lives, got them retirement funds. And retired and lived out the rest of her life as a rich lady.
I love that. I love that there's the community, the union, and then I love that there's the succession retirement plan. Because I will say, in my field, in family law, there are so many really old male family law attorneys, like in their 90s.
Right. And you're like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life.
No, I say to some of the associates in my firm, dude, if I'm still here when I'm 70, remind me of this conversation. There's just no way. At a certain point, you have to kind of gracefully exit while you can still remember the names of your clients, in my opinion.
And the names of your children, right? It's like, I kind of want to get out and enjoy my life.
Or your fellow pirates.
Exactly. When does Fierce launch?
So Fierce is out right now.
Oh, it is? Okay.
We have all 8 episodes of Fierce are available now on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And They're really fun because each of them is a little is an hour long and they're totally bingeable. And there's only eight. So it's like a good long road trip.
Besides, now I'm not going to be able to pronounce her name. The pirate lady.
Chinese Sow.
It's so hard. Oh my God.
Chinese Sow.
Guys.
Give us a few of the other ones. I mean, we probably won't have heard of them, but I wanted to kind of be in our consciousness as we begin to binge listen.
So you've got Jeanette Rankin. Jeanette was the first woman elected to Congress in the United States of America. And again, also like someone, shouldn't we know that name? Shouldn't we know
yes.
the first woman?
Yes.
And we don't. We just don't.
Well, now we do.
And now we do.
What year was that? What year was Jeanette? I mean, or don't give me exact, but range. Was it in the 40s or 50s?
So it was right before World War I.
Okay.
Here's the other thing. She was elected twice. And she
Badass.
Was a pacifist because she was a woman. So she was like, as a woman, I don't feel like we should be voting for war. She votes against World War I. Then she gets elected again, votes against World War II. And then when the Vietnam War rolls around, she marches against it in Washington with a bunch of like young hippies in go-go boots. And Jeanette.
And Ryan, no bras.
Just
love
and
it.
And no
Jeanette.
Bras. And like just okay. Jeanette marching. So also on Fierce, we have Dorothy Arzner, who is one of the most prolific Hollywood directors of all time, who you've also probably never heard her name. She was a female director in A Man's World. We have Grace Hopper, who created the first, the first computing language, the first language that allowed human beings to talk to computers right around World War II. Again, we talk about these tech geniuses all the time, but we've never heard the name Grace Hopper. And Christine Jorgensen, who was a transgender pioneer in America, one of the first Americans to undergo surgery publicly and really changed the way that we talked about and the language that we used when it came to transgendered people in the United States. And then we also have Madam C.J. Walker, and she's a woman who was born to freed slaves and turned herself into one of the first female self-made millionaires in the country.
Which she does hair care. She did hair care
she
products,
She did hair
right?
care. Oh my, and she had amazing hair products, and she was just, she created the Avon Lady business model before the Avon Lady existed.
Amazing. Okay. So folks, listen in. Fierce. You can get it on Apple Podcasts. It's on iHeart. Also Committed. And now tell us about your new one. Joe, talk about prolific. What are you doing in Maine over there?
Exclusive. All's fair exclusive.
This is actually an exclusive. I haven't talked about this in public yet. So I wanted to do a podcast. Look, it's called Under the Influence. And it's looking at the industry of mom influencers on social media, the good, the bad, the ugly, how it all works. It's the influencing industry is something like a $10 billion industry now, and no one talks about the economics of it. No one talks about how it both empowers women and makes women feel like complete shit. And so for 8 episodes, we're doing a deep dive, really digging into the economics, the anthropology, the sociology, how the influencing industry works, and what it looks like when we're in a world where we're being sold to as mothers, as women, constantly, and a constant scroll.
I love it. And when is that launching?
So that will launch in the fall. We wanted to be able to get out to do a lot of the reporting, and we've done a lot of the reporting during quarantine, during COVID. And I had this idea because I was up at 4 in the morning breastfeeding my second baby, right? Scrolling through Instagram because you got one baby on the boob and your phone in your hand. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm buying all of this weird shit. And I'm like, why? Who? Oh, that's what's happening. And so we want to talk about how that happens.
I love it. Journalists and lawyers have investigative interview skills in common. And these are the All's Fair interrogatories. Joe, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Always.
Which relationship in your life has had the most profound impact?
Oh, that's good. I should say my husband, but that's not true. I mean, he's great. I love him very much. But I dated the worst human being ever after college. I mean, he was just like the quintessential bad boy. And it taught me what I wanted and what I didn't want in a relationship. Like, I kind of like a bad boy, right? I like some things about a bad boy, but then I also
want
someone
right.
who's a little bit more stable and steady. And I think that relationship taught me how I wanted to be treated for the rest of my life.
I like that. What's your favorite love song?
Oh, Eternal Flame.
Okay.
Ah, Bangles. I love that song.
I know, right?
If there's an 80s girl band, Johnny's in the
Johnny's
audience.
Like, I'm on it. I love them too.
What is the one piece of advice that you'd share with your 20-something-year-old self?
You're going to be totally okay. I spent so much time worrying and fretting and just kind of like hating myself. I did not like myself at all in my 20s. And I just want to tell that girl, like, it's going to be fine. It's all going to be fine. And also my other, I have two that I'm cheating, but other piece of advice is no one is paying attention to you as much as you think that they are.
That one, I mean, I like the other one too, but I think that's really important. Okay, Joe, which romantic comedy could you watch on repeat?
Sliding Doors.
Right. I mean,
over and over.
Especially
and
for you. That's so perfect. I love it.
And I also, people recurring reference theme. Sliding Doors. Like, if you pay attention, you will hear a Sliding Doors reference at least once a week. Sometimes I hear it twice a week from dudes, too. It is now so in our culture.
Was it really the first one? I mean, it's in our culture, but there had to have been some kind of story, film, whatever, where that same thing happens.
I don't know. Is it just
the age or generation that we all, like, go back to
that? I think anyone between the age of 30 and 50 right now. You could just say Sliding Doors. Anyone between the age of 30 and 60 right now.
Well, yes.
You could say Sliding Doors and they'd be like, oh yeah, of course. And everyone has a moment. Everyone has a Sliding Doors moment where, like, that moment would have been the moment that changed my life.
Yep. Yep. Or that moment was the moment that changed my life too.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Interesting. Joe, we love your brilliance today, and your message about empowerment is one we want to amplify. Thank you for Zooming. Enjoy your lobster. Tell people where they can listen to your shows and where to find you and your books online, won't you?
So the best place to find me online is probably Instagram. It's the only social media I use anymore. It's Joe Piazza Author. And you can find my podcast, Committed, Fierce, and Soon Under the Influence, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day, the rest of your vacation. Be safe. You're wonderful.
So
what a badass she is. She's wonderful. So smart, so quick, so kind. I mean, I liked her. She can stay.
I like her sort of position on female empowerment and about, you know, we can't vote for people that we don't understand, that we don't see. So putting it out there, telling people stories, it's so important.
And that podcast sounds amazing. I mean, it is kind of.
Which one? All of them.
Fierce in particular. It's crazy to me that we can have lived as long as we have and studied as much as we did and not have heard of any of those eight women that she mentioned. I mean, that's insane.
And we have lived a long time.
And they're not obscure either.
Right. That's our show for today. If you just found us, tap subscribe and follow us on social at It's Over Easy.
Click to rate us at Apple Podcasts, and thank you for listening.
Bye, everybody.